In the early summer of 1940, Anthony Irwin was a young officer in the Essex Regiment. As his battalion carried out a fighting retreat towards the French coast, held up by civilian refugees, targeted by guns and aircraft, pressured by approaching German infantry, Irwin, like most of his fellow officers and men, was experiencing war for the first time. One afternoon, under attack from German bombers, he saw his first dead bodies. The first pair upset Irwin, but the second pair made him vomit and appeared in his dreams for years afterwards. The difference was not in the manner of their deaths or even the severity of their wounds. It was in the second pair's indecent attitude. Naked, demeaned, bloated and distorted, they embodied something worse than death. That evening, his battalion was under attack again. Overwhelmed, a young private began crying. Irwin took the boy aside, intending to lead him away, but the private, rigid with misery, refused to move. The only thing to do, decided Irwin, was to knock him out. He ordered a sergeant to take a swing at the private's chin, but the sergeant missed, cracking his knuckles on a wall. The private suddenly came to life and ran, but was chased down by Irwin, who tackled him and punched him in the face. The boy was now unconscious. Irwin slung the private over his shoulder and carried him down to a nearby cellar. It was dark inside, and Irwin shouted for somebody to bring him a light. In the relative quiet, Irwin heard surprised voices, a man's and a woman's, and his eyes slowly focused on a soldier in the corner of the cellar having sex with a Belgian barmaid. Who could blame them, wondered Irwin. With death so close, they were grabbing hold of life. Irwin was among hundreds of thousands of officers and men of the British Expeditionary Force retreating through Belgium towards the coast. They had sailed to France following the declaration of war on Germany on the 3rd of September 1939. After months of phony war, the German Blitzkrieg in the West had been launched on the morning of the 10th of May, and the bulk of the British forces was hurried into Belgium to assume prearranged positions along the River Deal. There they formed the Allies' left flank, alongside the French and Belgian armies, facing Hitler's Army Group B. Further to the south, the Allies' right flank was protected by the mighty Maginot Line, a series of heavily defended fortresses, blockhouses and bunkers along the French border with Germany. For a few short days in May 1940, the Allies and the Germans, broadly equal in military terms, seemed destined to act out another war of trenches and attrition. If experience could be trusted, the Germans would soon be hurling themselves at heavily defended Allied lines. But the Allied commanders were instead offered a sharp lesson in modern warfare. Between the strongly held Allied flanks was the Ardennes Forest, theoretically impregnable and weakly defended by the French. Only 4 light cavalry divisions and 10 reserve divisions protected a 100-mile front, and the Germans had a plan to exploit this front. First formulated by Lieutenant General Erich Manstein, the plan had been through 7 drafts by May 1940. It involved an initial attack on Holland and northern Belgium, drawing the Allies into a trap. For at the same time, the main German attack would come further south at the very weakest point of the Ardennes front. Led by panzer tank divisions, it would begin by crossing the River Meuse, pushing through the area around Sedan and surging northwest for the coast, splitting the French armies in two and joining up with the northern attack to encircle the British Expeditionary Force. The Manstein plan was extremely risky. Breaking through a wooded area was a huge logistical challenge, and the panzer tank was a largely untested weapon. The plan's success depended on unprecedented speed and intensive air support, but above all, it depended on surprise. If the French learned of it in advance, it would surely fail. In January 1940, however, the Belgians had captured a copy of the previous German plan to launch the main assault in Holland and Belgium. This was a straightforward repeat of Germany's First World War strategy, and the Allies had no reason to believe that the Germans were now considering an alternative. The level of risk involved in the Manstein plan was so great, the break from traditional practice so complete, that most German generals refused to countenance it. It gained, however, an influential supporter in General Franz Halder, Chief of Staff of Army High Command. And crucially, it had the support of the man whose opinion ultimately mattered in Nazi Germany, Adolf Hitler. The attack was ordered to go ahead.